Bienvenidos a la presentación.
Welcome to the presentation of the results for the third quarter 2019 of CIE Automotive. Ms. Lorea Aristizabal, Director of Corporate Development at the CIE Group, will be in charge of giving this presentation. At the end of the presentation, there will be a Q&A session. You will be able to ask your questions by phone by dialing 01 on your keyboard at any time during the presentation. And now I'll hand over to Ms. Aristizabal. Go ahead, please. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the conference call on the results of the third quarter for CIE Automotive. Before starting, we would like to remind you that, as we've been doing in previous quarters, we have adjusted the figures for the third quarter of 2018, shown now as comparable, in order that they will not include the results of Dominion, Stokes, or Biofuels. Please bear this in mind when it comes to making your growth calculations. We'll start by asking what happened in each of the CE markets, and we can tell you that some of the main headlines have come from India, which is going to be the first geography we review. We focus on the third quarter in India, and we see there's been a generalized drop in vehicle productions in each and every segment. If we talk about passenger vehicles, volumes have dropped by slightly over 20% in the quarter, referring to motorbikes, 15%. We'd like to briefly remind you of some of the motives that may be behind this drop. First of all, the limitations in available loans that continue to affect the market after the crisis during the second half of 2018 of two of the main Indian financial institutions, and its a contagion on regular banks in a country where 80% of cars at almost 40% of motorbikes are financed. Secondly, the adaptation of the vehicles to the new safety regulations that came into effect in July and October this year, which implies somewhat more costly vehicles in a weaker demand environment. Thirdly, the effect of Bharat Stage 6 and the inventory effect of old versions that met the previous regulations under Bharat Stage 4. Fourthly, we can also talk about the delay in the decision to buy by the consumer, among other things, because of the rumors about a possible reduction of the GST, a state tax very similar to VAT. And finally, the new requirement to take out a five-year insurance for motorbikes, which represents an almost 15% increase in the cost of insurance. With an accumulated contraction of almost 12% up to September, it is expected that the fourth quarter will again be a bad quarter, very much in line with the third quarter, with a drop in production again of approximately 20%. This would mean that for the whole year, the Indian market would shrink by close to 14%. We are not optimistic regarding the next two or three quarters. Although for 2020, it's true that we have to consider several factors. That the coming into effect of Bharat Stage 6 is April 2020, and that by then, or perhaps even a bit before that, production should take off again and the impact should be less. We should also consider the effect sooner or later of the measures that the Indian government has been taking in recent weeks to reactivate demand. Measures such as the vehicle scrapping program, lowering interest rates, reducing corporate tax, or lifting the prohibition on increasing government fleets, among others. And finally, of course, the comparison base will be low, with slightly over 4 million cars produced in 2019 in India, which means going back to production levels of 2015. Because of all this, the forecast for the market in 2020 are a slight growth in volumes of approximately 1%. Another area of interest this quarter is North America. Developments in this market have been practically flat during the airtight third quarter, with a slight shrinkage of 0.4%, although the biggest drop has been in Mexico, with minus 3%, associated basically to the slowdown in demand in its main export markets: United States, Europe, Canada, South America. Meanwhile, production in the U.S. market has remained practically flat in spite of the two-week strike at GM during September. With a cumulative traction up to September of minus 2%, it is expected that the fourth quarter in NAFTA will be the worst in the year, with a production drop of more than 9%, a drop that is especially strong in the United States, with minus 11%, completely linked to the General Motors strike. As you will know, the strike started on September 16th and ended on October 25th, after a stoppage of almost a month and a half in 10 of its 13 NAFTA plants and a production loss of somewhat over 300,000 cars. There's talk about recovering part of the production in the coming months, especially in the first quarter, but the total estimate for 2019 for NAFTA is a drop in production of minus 4%, partially offset in 2020 with an increase in volume of plus 2%. Another interesting market, the Chinese market, where volumes in the quarter have dropped by minus 5%. Although with certain signs of stabilization, with production having reduced their downturn rate during the months of August, minus 1, and September, minus 3%, partly due to the low comparison volumes we already had in the third quarter of 2018. Our view of the Chinese market is similar to that discussed in previous quarters. On the one hand, the negative and very uncertain environment in relation to the trade war between China and the United States, and on the other, the impact of the new China 6 emissions regulations, which was implemented early in July 2019 in more than 50% of the Chinese market, but which will come into effect in July 2020 for the rest of the market. With an accumulated contraction of more than 11%, it is expected that in the fourth quarter of the year, there will be a slight drop in production of approximately minus 1%. This means that for the whole year, the Chinese market will shrink by close to minus 9%. For 2020, the market forecasts are a slight increase in production, but below 1% in any case, and this considers several elements. On the one hand, the expectation of a more favorable climate regarding the discussions on the trade war with the EU, the gradual transfer to the final consumer of the lower VAT rate, which came into effect in April this year, the possible effect of lower interest rates in the country, but above all, and once again, a favorable comparison base with only 24.5 million cars that will be produced in 2019, which again means going back to levels of 2015. We switch to the European market, and as in previous quarters, during the third quarter, very different performances have been observed in the passenger vehicle segment and the truck segment, although in this quarter the trends have clearly turned around. And while passenger vehicle production has slightly grown, truck production has dropped considerably in Europe and very especially in Germany, the geography our forges are most directly exposed to. So let's talk first about the truck sector. And we first have to contextualize this segment where the production figures are not as agile or accessible to us as the data from the car market. Regarding actual truck production figures, we currently have volumes up to June where we already saw a drop of more than minus 5% in Germany. And production estimates then were almost 10% for the third quarter and minus 10% for the fourth quarter. However, and while waiting to shortly receive the actual production truck data up to September 30th, our perception is that production in the third quarter has dropped much more than expected, a very significant double-digit figure, close to 20%, and with a drop that is especially concentrated around the month of September. We do have more current data regarding truck registrations, actual data up to August and provisional data for September that reinforce our perception of what happened during the third quarter. Sales of vehicles of more than 16 tons, minus 18% in July, minus 11% in August, minus 16% in September. And sales of vehicles between 3.5 and 16 tons, minus 15% in July, minus 6% in August, minus 12% in September. We expected the market to get worse in the second half. However, such major drops were not foreseeable in this quarter, and we believe they have been influenced by several factors, among others, so we can mention the following. The end of the truck cycle, which we already discussed in previous quarters. Secondly, the slowdown in the growth expected for the Eurozone and the global economy, with some countries even going into a technical recession. And thirdly, a certain effect of the bringing forward of the purchasing of trucks to the first half due to several factors. The implementation of more expensive tolls in certain countries applied to older trucks. The risk of a no-deal Brexit that would imply tariffs of more than 20% for European trucks the following day. Another aspect can be the bringing in of the new smart tachograph as of June 15, compulsory in all trucks registered from that date on. We believe with all this that during the coming quarters in Europe, and more specifically in Germany, we're going to continue to see drops in volume, in truck volume, that will not be as sharp. And we will see a couple of years with a negative European truck market performance until the beginning of the new cycle, which we believe could start as soon as 2021. We now move on to the passenger vehicle with a positive development of plus 0.3% in the quarter. And this is mainly explained by the low comparison base in the third quarter last year due to the WLTP effect we know about. In the whole year, there are other aspects, uncertainty of Brexit, the undecided final consumer when it comes to deciding on what vehicle to buy in view of the political swings. And because of this, it is estimated that there will be a drop in volume of approximately 4% for the whole year, with practically all the main European production markets being affected. With this snapshot of two markets in very different situations, the truck and the passenger vehicle, if in previous quarters we've seen the European CIE truck side helping to offset the drop in volumes in the European passenger vehicle side, this quarter we've seen the opposite effect. We've seen the quarterly sales with positive growth on the car side and with a negative growth on the truck side. Brazil. During the third quarter, we have continued with the trend shown during the first half of the year. It's grown in the quarter by closer to 3%, a Brazilian market that continues to be supported by domestic demand, since the Argentinian market, which is its main export destination, continues to perform in a very negative way, and exports have fallen by almost 50%. Although the prospects for the Brazilian market have fallen slightly in recent months due to the slowdown of the world economy, the expectation for the whole year 2019 is to maintain the same accumulated growth rate up to September, approximately 2.5%, and this could improve if Argentina picks up at some point. In summary of all the above, the global market has dropped as of September 30th by close to 6%, that we are experiencing in the sector what we could call a perfect storm. We are affected at the same time by trade wars, economic slowdown, geopolitical impacts, and technology changes, among others. Because of all this, once again, the volume estimates for 2019 have been lowered, and the latest forecast is a fourth quarter with an additional drop of more than 5% and a full year with a contraction of almost 6%, which will take us below 89 million vehicles produced, which represents, I've already said it several times for the various geographies, but also on a global level. This means going back to 2015 levels. 2020 doesn't seem to bring better news and points to maintaining a similar volume level. If we have deep dived very much into the markets, we believe results as of September 30th speak for themselves, with an increase in EBITDA of more than 13%, going from 400 million to more than 450 million, and a net income which increases by more than 18%, from barely 190 million to 224 million. If we talk about the business operating margins, this is the first quarter in which CIE Gold is consolidated for 3 full months, which produces a dilution effect on percentage margins compared to the first quarter of 2019, where there was no consolidation, and compared to the second quarter of 2019, where only 7 weeks of CIE Gold were consolidated. This dilution effect brought about by the inorganic perimeter is significant. We're talking about more than 100 basis points in the accumulated figures up to September, and an ever bigger effect on the third quarter alone. Meanwhile, the organic perimeter margins grow significantly compared to 2018, both in percentage over sales as well as in absolute value. An organic perimeter which continues to fulfill the commitment, with EBITDA margins above 18%, with profit after taxes of more than 10% over sales, and with a net income, a purely organic net income, which has grown at double-digit figures, both in the quarter alone as well as in the accumulated figures, which once again enables us to reaffirm the guidance for 2019. If we talk about the organic perimeter and the various regions, we can confirm that as of September 30th, all geographies have improved in margins, or have at least maintained them in some cases, these operating margins compared to the same period last year. The key to this improvement in operating margins in the organic perimeter, in spite of the unfavorable context, lies to a large extent in our business model, where always gives the priority to income and cash flow. And that's the reason for the structure of our income statement, with very contained fixed costs that provide us with resilience to assume certain drops in sales without affecting the margins, and provides flexibility to adapt, taking the necessary measures at each plant. Secondly, that's why we don't give up our strict commercial policy in spite of the complex sectoral environment. Thirdly, that's why we put the focus on operating efficiency and operational excellence, making the most of moments like these of less organic growth. Therefore, we believe that we buffer negative situations much better than other players. Talking about net financial debt, as of September 30th, it amounted to 1.585 billion, which represents a DFN EBITDA ratio of 2.44 times. The main elements to be highlighted in this third quarter are, first of all, the conversion ratio of EBITDA into operating cash flow, over 61% in the third quarter alone, which means an accumulated conversion ratio up to September of 60%. And from there, we have the usual elements for the third quarter, such as the July payment of the supplementary dividend for 2018, 40 million. The CapEx growth, which in this quarter has amounted to approximately 30 million and represented 2.7% of the sales for the year accumulated. The total CapEx, including both growth and maintenance, brings us to September at levels of 6.5% over sales, slightly lower than in previous years. And finally, the closing of the purchasing of Mapremex. With all this, we continue to generate high levels of operating cash flow, which enable us to maintain our dividend policy, a dividend whose value grows at double-digit figures in parallel with the growth in our net income, while financing our investment in growth, a growth that we are adapting to the current market, with less emphasis on organic investment and greater emphasis on inorganic investment, as we're seeing during this fiscal year. Finally, I would like to refer to the 2018 perimeter, the organic perimeter, whose pro forma balance sheet continues to be total in line with the strategic objectives. In terms of profitability, the RONA at September 30th is very close to the 23% guidance. In terms of debt, the DFN EBITDA ratio as of September 30th is at levels of 1.4 times. And in terms of cash generation, the organic perimeter far exceeds the objective of 55% of the conversion rate of EBITDA into operating cash flow. And to conclude, in view of all the above, we can confirm once again our commitment to comply with the 2019 guidance and therefore of closing the strategic plan 2016-2020 one year earlier than planned, a confirmation that bearing in mind the current market context, we hope that you will value. I would just like to thank you all for your time and move on to any questions. Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The Q&A session will be starting now. If you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on the keyboard of your phone. To ensure sound quality, we recommend that for your questions, you use a landline. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we remind you once again that if you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your keyboard now. Thank you. The first question is from Alvaro Lence from Alatra Equities. Go ahead, please. Hello. Good afternoon, Lorea. Just a quick question. The financial spending you've reported hasn't increased in the quarter very significantly with the increase in debt. I don't know whether you expect an increase in expenses in Q4 or whether you can give us a guidance of what the expenses should be for the whole year of financial expenses. Thank you. Hello. Good afternoon, Alvaro. I think that when you think about financial expenses, you have to consider that we don't just have the recurrent financial expenses. If I can explain how I see them, I would divide them into three parts. One part, pure financial expenses that have increased in the second quarter and the third quarter compared to the first because of the higher debt. A second part, which is the income for the equity method, which has grown significantly. If in previous years we only had the equity method for some of the small CIE companies where we're integrating with this method, now we have a significantly higher equity method because of the SumUp joint venture that has brought in Teva. This financial earning in the second Q only corresponded to 7 weeks, and in the third quarter it corresponds to three complete months with the income of that joint venture. So the equity method has increased. And there's a third part of the financial expenses, which is a bit more volatile and has to have derivatives, derivatives in the interest rate, in the exchange rate. And you can find all the details in our annual and six-monthly report. And this gives a certain volatility to the financial expenses. It was more negative in the first quarter, more positive in the second quarter. In this quarter, they've also had a certain effect. So I think that we have to think about those three items. The net is that the first quarter, first 6 months, let's say, of approximately 11 million, if I'm not mistaken. This quarter, it's been another 7 million or something like that. That makes around 17 million in net financial expenses from the three effects. And I think that we have to wait for a fourth quarter where the recurrent part has, of course, increased compared to our previous financial expenses because of the increase in debt. And we'll see how the derivatives can make things better or worse because of the volatility. Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you. The next question is from Robert Jackson from Banco Santander. Go ahead, please. Hello, good afternoon, Lore. Could you give us some example on your operating efficiency focus? What are you doing to better understand how you're dealing with the challenges or the problems in the sector right now? Thank you. Hello, Robert. Good afternoon. I think that the best example I can give was given the other day by the CEO of Mahindra Fier, Andrenatha, when talking about our worst market during the quarter with drops of 20%, and where without a doubt we have to make the biggest adaptations to our plants. They asked Andrenatha how many people he'd laid off at the plants, and Andrenatha answered that, of course, there had been personnel cutbacks. But please, people shouldn't focus on thinking that that was the only focus we have, reducing the headcount. This is a measure like many others that have to be taken, and that asked you not to think that it's all related to cost cutbacks and personnel cutbacks. In a geography where volumes have dropped as much as they have in India, we're focusing a lot more on other areas such as plant productivity. When the market was growing, we didn't have the possibility of focusing so much. And now we are focusing on bottlenecks, on productivity, on efficiency, on issues at the plant itself. Bear in mind that if in India, before the volume started to drop, we had approximately between 75 and 80% of utilized capacity. Right now, the volumes have dropped, and we have some more free capacity, and we're using that as much as we can for those efficiency issues. And again, I'm giving this example because it's been the market where there has been the biggest drop in volume in the quarter by far. You've seen other markets where there are slight drops, and with those slight drops, it's not necessary to take any dramatic measures or do anything special other than focusing on operating excellence, which is what the organic perimeter is showing. I think that the organic perimeter, which last year in this quarter was at 17% EBITDA, being above 18% with the same perimeter, I think proves of this focus we have. Okay, and in NAFTA, what utilization levels do you have now? Robert, bear in mind that our organic operations in NAFTA have not only not fallen, we have actually grown. As I was saying, we were practically full and investing a great deal, and I refer to the accounts for 2018 or the 6 month accounts in 2019, where you have the capex by regions. You'll see that NAFTA has been and is one of the areas with the most intense investment since we continue to grow. Although the market isn't, we are still at extremely high utilization rates. And the greenfields in NAFTA, have they started in this second quarter? Or are they there since the third quarter? Robert, there are several new projects, you're right, and some of them started in the last two quarters and in this quarter specifically. But it's true that the market volumes, I'll give you an example. If the ramp-up was 60 degrees, well, probably the ramp-up now is probably somewhat more gradual, but they're there, they're making their contribution, and I think this can be seen by our organic growth in NAFTA. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We remind you once again, if you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your keyboard. The next question is from José María Cánovas from JB Capital Markets. Go ahead, please. Hello, good afternoon, Lorea. I would like to ask about, although it's a more qualitative figure, regarding the development in the margins of the various acquisitions. Some haven't been there for very long, Mapremex, but there's also Inteva. How do you see that, and how is the ramp-up evolving? Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chema. Thank you for the question. Talking about the three acquisitions, well, I think we need to focus on two, Aurangabad and Inteva in particular. To start with the easy one, perhaps, at Aurangabad, You know that we have acquired a company. This is public information. When we bought it with approximately a 12% EBITDA margin, it's more or less where we are. The last quarter it was slightly lower. This quarter it's around about that, and it's not accompanying the Indian market for us to make it fly as soon as what we would have liked. But this is what I said to Robert. If you have the opportunity of listening to the Mahindra CIE conference, there's quite a lot of qualitative information on the map, how the integration is going so well, how the European aluminium teams are very much focused on supporting the everyday operations there, how there's a very important new investment planned for the coming quarters that will be focused on future exports from India of some aluminium parts that they are ordering from us. So Aurangabad is doing phenomenally well. If we go to Inteva, well, of course, in the end, in the quarter, we've integrated just in this quarter approximately 200 million in inorganic sales. More than 80% of that is Inteva sales. So it's establishing the rate for the inorganic margins. Inteva, as in the previous quarter, you know that it isn't at double-digit EBITDA, and we don't plan for it to be this year. This year, I think we have two clear focuses at Inteva. One is the analysis, the budgeting, and a clear business plan for the next few years, establishing the groundwork for improvement at Inteva in coming years. And meanwhile, I would say that what we are doing this year is to go for the priorities. And when I say go for the priorities, I mean from the operating point of view, going to those regions and those plants specifically where the margins are lower. The global EBITDA margin is a bit lower in NAFTA and Europe than in China with better margins. So we're focusing on those two geographic areas to try to turn them around as soon as possible. And then many issues that have to do with the way CIE works, how to do the tenders. And I'm not just referring to the price, that too, but in the sense that our stricter commercial policy, you know what we're like. If the price isn't enough to provide a certain level of profitability, we prefer not to take the project. But not just that. In the case of Inteva, this goes even further. It's a matter of trying to convey to the team the commitment that if we said that in a tender the associated investment is going to be 10, it should be 10, and not end up being 14, as we've seen occurred in the past. And the same can be said for engineering. We're trying to go into that important engineering we have in Germany, the engineering we have in the US, the engineering in China, the engineering in Slovakia, and try to explain the commitment to the budget. Apart from this, many qualitative measures, such as analyzing the structures to determine what the structural level we need in the coming years, etc., etc. So I would say a compendium of actions that this year are going to establish the groundwork for the Inteva strategic plan for future years. Thank you very much, Lorea. If you don't mind, a question about what you said. Could we therefore see at Inteva during the coming quarters a project being done away with that doesn't meet with your policies, that isn't going to be the margins, a legacy project that could be withdrawn because of these reasons, or don't you think so? The theoretical answer has to be absolutely yes. The practical reason is a bit more complicated. At Inteva, to distinguish it from the rest of CIE Tier 2, the component tier, there are two major differences. First of all, if we picked up a project today in the rest of CIE at any other plant, we could have an investment taking several months, approval, whatever. The SOP could be between 12 and 24 months on average. So we could be doing an 18-month SOP. In the case of Inteva, it's much more complicated. Anything that is picked up now, you won't see in sales for 3 years on average. So we're talking about a pre-process that is much more complex, with a lot of engineering, as you know. That on the one hand. And on the other hand, regarding withdrawing projects, with any one of our component customers, the conversation could be in a situation of low profitability. We can talk to the customer about finding an exit plan, because there are other suppliers that are relatively easy to find on the market. In the case of the roofs, as you know, there are only three main players. One is Inteva, one is Inalfa, and the other one Megasto. So the theoretical answer, once again, is yes. I think that the practical answer is that the two parties, customer and us, will do everything we can to prevent coming to that situation. Perfect. Very clear. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We remind you once again, if you would like to ask a question, you can do so by dialing 01 on your keyboard. Thank you very much. The next question is from Eric Ejager from Sidentis. Go ahead, please. Hello, good afternoon, Lorea. A question regarding what you said about Inteva and the sector in general. I don't know whether because of the harder market conditions for this final quarter and for next year compared to the visibility we had a few months ago, have you seen a hardening of the commercial policies of your competitors in general regarding prices? And also in the roof business, I don't know whether you can tell us the position that's being taken by your main competitors to look at what can be expected and to compare this with other periods where we've had these pressures in the sector. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Kike. Components and roofs, roofs and components, it doesn't make any difference. Without a doubt, you're right that market conditions are poor, and that means that the pressure of our customers is very significant. I think that in a situation like this, current negative market requires drastic measures from us, and measures where we don't hesitate. And we could see that in my answer to Gemma, strict commercial policy. In other words, if we have to lose a project because of a significant price drop decision from our customers, we'll lose it. If we shouldn't pick up a new volume because it comes with a poor price and will penalize our income statement, not just today, but for the next 8 years, well, it won't be picked up. And the same goes for measures in investment policies. The organic growth capex, without a doubt, has to tend to go down in line with what we're seeing in our top line, and we will refocus on inorganic growth. I think that we have to bear in mind that CIE management has always given priority to income and cash flow generation versus anything that has to do with the top line. If we look at the history of CIE in the last 23 years, if we look at the track record, you'll see that sales grow every year, but the origin of that growth hasn't always been the same. The market context forces us to readapt the growth strategy to the type of growth that will generate more value. When the market is expanding, organic growth makes all the sense in the world. But when the market is shrinking, you have to be much more selective with the organic volume, and you have to make the most of all the opportunities brought in by inorganic growth, as you've seen in 2019. I think it's a great example. Little organic growth and a lot of inorganic growth. And yes, I agree with you, and that's the situation with our customers, and we're taking all the measures and readapting our strategy to what we see fit. An additional question, Lorea. To what extent can you adjust in quantitative terms your growth capex for the coming year, bearing in mind the current circumstances, or how committed is that growth capex already? Well, fortunately, the market situation and these drops isn't something that happened overnight. I was going to say, fortunately, we've been seeing it for several quarters. Not fortunately, but in relation to your question, we have had the visibility that a few bad quarters were coming, so the budgets we have for 2019, which we usually develop during the months of October and November, have considered a very significant reduction in growth capex in line with what we believe we're going to need for organic growth in the future. And what will always be left, you can't forget, Kike, is the maintenance capex, a capex that's around 4% over sales. And there we don't have much wiggle room. And another question, sorry, would it be possible for us to see that part of that traditional growth capex would be assigned to adjustment measures to adjust the internal capacity that won't be so visible? Or do you not intend to do much in that sense for the time being? I don't know whether I quite understood the question, Kike. That capex we're lowering has been taken out of the snapshot. It's not being aimed at other types of investment. It's growth capex in extra capacity, which right now, looking at the market, we're not going to need. And therefore, we've reduced it, and that's it. It's outside the snapshot. It's not aimed at other types of investment. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. We don't have any more questions in Spanish. Therefore, we'll now move on to the questions in English.
The next question in English comes from Alexandre Reverdy from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three, please. The first one relates to your outperformance. So obviously, we've seen your outperformance decelerating in Q3 versus the previous quarters, which is in line with your comments and your switch to inorganic growth. But how should we think about your outperformance level going forward? In Q4 and 2020, if we assume that IHS is right, so -5 for Q4 and broadly flattish for 2020? That's the first question. The second is on your guidance. So you still have an EBITDA margin above 18% at the same perimeter. Could you please confirm whether it excludes IFRS 16 or not? And the final one is your efficiency measures. Is there further room for improvement next year? And if you could quantify on the expected savings, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Hello, Alex. Good afternoon. Let's see if I remember all the questions properly. Regarding the first question, which is the gap we have against the market. Well, I think that in the context of the first 9 months, and although not all quarters are linear, you can see 6 points a gap with the market. And I think that in a situation like this, that's very valuable. You always have to bear in mind that it's more merit to decrease less than the market than to grow more than the market when the market is booming. And we've seen this with other players. I can say that the quarterly average for the gap we've had with the market in the last 4 years has been one high digit figure. And I think that that's something you should bear in mind. And there's a track record there that proves it. It's true that there's an additional element now that you have to include in that gap, which is a negative market. And while the market is negative, I think I emphasized several times during the presentation that our priority is not going to grow organically. It's going to maintain profitability and cash flow. So there's a figure which is a historic reality you can check. And also a new element that could distort it slightly. Regarding the guidance of 18% in our organic perimeter up to September, it's significantly higher than 18%. And with the IFRS adjustment, we are complying with the guidance. And thirdly, I got lost. The third question was? Ah, if there's capacity to improve efficiency, sorry, Alex, I forgot the last question. I think that the answer is clearly yes. Clearly yes, because as of September 30th, we have a margin of 17 point something percent. And the companies where those margins come from can still be made more efficient. I'm not just talking about the organic perimeter, which is almost 20% of sales, without having integrated everything yet, because the Pamex hasn't been integrated completely. But on the inorganic perimeter, of course, there's a lot of room for improvement. And in the organic perimeter, we're working on efficiencies, but we have markets with drops like India that don't allow us yet to be as efficient as we would like. So the answer is yes, of course. Some geographies are more limited than others. As usual, we go to those marvelous NAFTA margins of 20-some percent, which without a doubt will have less capacity to improve than others. But the answer is yes. There's room for improvement with respect.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have no more questions in today's conference call.
Bueno, pues parece que me dicen que ya no hay más preguntas, con lo cual...
I'm told there are no more questions, so we'll put an end to the conference call. Thank you very much for your time, and you know where you can find us if you need any further clarification. Thank you. And this is the end of the presentation. Thank you very much for listening in.